Hello and welcome to another episode of the Career Tipper Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Beatty, and today's guest is Natasha Darkangelo. Goodness, I still got it wrong.
That's okay.
Natasha Darkangelo is our guest today. And what's so amazing about having Natasha is that she is going to be the upcoming speaker for my first Color to Connect Mental Health Awareness Workshop. So it's going to be here in Central Florida. It's going to be live. And mental health awareness, I believe, is something that should happen year round. It is something that I feel that definitely is a contributing factor to our self-care and also to help us evolve to our professional best. So as I have evolved in helping others be their best at work professionally, I have begun to champion mental health awareness in a whole new way. And one thing that was led to me to do is start the Color to Connect workshop. So Natasha, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me on. Very excited to be here.
Thank you. So tell us, why are you a counselor? What got you into this industry?
Sure. So a bit of a long story, but I am a former educator. So I used to teach once upon a time. And what I found was that I was limited in what I was able to do in the classroom. And I found that a lot of my students were struggling, but they were struggling because of things going on at home. And unfortunately, education is set up in such a way that we don't really have time as teachers to genuinely meet those emotional needs. And so it led me away from the field of teaching and education. And when I moved down to Florida, I started working for Argosy University in admissions and had the opportunity to get my school paid for. So I said, sure, sign me up for a free master's. Was originally going to do school counseling or school psychology because I figured that would be a way for me to kind of get back into education, but doing more of what felt more natural to me. And a colleague suggested that I do a mental health counseling degree instead, which would allow me to work with a wider range of populations. And so I said, absolutely. And I ended up doing work with adults in my internship. And it turns out I actually really liked it. So I wasn't expecting that to happen. But so did my internship at a local community mental health clinic and worked on the inpatient units for about a year and a half, worked in private practice. Now I'm working fully remotely for a company named Headspace Health. But there's always been that common thread of I want to help. I think I was born to be a helper. And now I'm really aligned with what I think my mission is. And I'm privileged to be able to do that every day. So, yeah.
I love when you kind of like fall into something that ends up being the fuel to the passion of your life work. Yeah. I think those are the best stories.
This is where I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I'm very lucky.
That's awesome. So let's talk about some signs that listeners would know, help them recognize when they're struggling with their mental health.
So a couple of super common ones. Whenever I do an intake with a new client, and that's the first session is always an intake. The four areas that I always check on are, how are you sleeping? Especially the last month or so, that's a really big sign that things may be not going so well. Maybe you are sleeping too much, or maybe you're not able to sleep at all. You're having a hard time shutting your brain off at night, or maybe you cannot stay asleep. So You fall asleep, but then you're only asleep for a couple hours. You get back up, takes you another hour to fall back asleep. So changes in sleeping patterns is a huge one. The other big one is changes in appetite. So if you notice that maybe it feels like there's this huge knot in your stomach and you just can't, like the thought of food is just not appealing to you, that's another big sign. Or sometimes we eat our feelings, and so sometimes we go to the other end of that extreme, and we're eating too much. We're using that as a coping skill, so that's another big sign. The other one is changes in concentration, not just at work. I know some of us can really keep it together for work. We have to stay focused. You know, maybe we have a very detail-oriented job, but also if you're at home, and you are watching a TV show, or maybe you're trying to read a book, and you've had to restart this TV show 5 times, right? But this is something that you wanted to watch. You were excited to do it. That's another sign that probably something is going on. You just can't focus. And then sometimes memory. So like short-term memory. So, you know, you leave the office, you know, you got to stop at the grocery store on the way home. I need milk and eggs. You say this to yourself, I need milk and eggs. And then the next thing you know, you're sitting in your driveway and you're like, I forgot I was supposed to stop for milk and eggs. That can be another sign that something's going on. Sometimes that means that your brain is a little more preoccupied with everything else to pay attention to that kind of stuff. So those are the four main areas I always check on. The other thing that I would say is, and I say this to the folks that I work with, you know yourself better than anybody else, right? If something doesn't feel right, then it probably doesn't feel right. It may be like, you know, on your dashboard, when that little light comes on when you need an oil change, those kinds of changes are your body and your brain's way of telling you, hey, there's something going on here. You may want to get it checked out. I think a lot of times we try to convince ourselves that it's not that bad, or, you know, so what? I've been feeling sad. I can deal with it myself. But if you've been feeling sad for months and months and months, why struggle alone? Why suffer in silence when there's so much support out there that you're able to tap into? So that would be another thing that I would recommend. Think about it as if you had a friend who thought that they had broken a foot in their bone, right? And, you know, you were checking in on them and they were like, no, I'm fine. I can suck it up, but I'll be okay. I don't need to go see anybody about that, right? You know, we do this all the time with mental health, where we would never do it with physical health. You would never tell a friend who suspected that they had a broken bone not to go see somebody, right? So I think another thing is it's incumbent upon all of us that if we have a friend that is vulnerable enough to open up, I feel like I've been kind of depressed, or I feel like I've been really anxious, or I'm having suicidal thoughts, right? Sometimes we have friends open up to us about that thing. It can be very scary. I get that, unless you do what I do for a living, that can be very scary. However, we all have an opportunity in that moment to say, wow, I'm really glad that you said something to me. I'm so sorry that's going on. Can I help you find somebody to go talk to? You should really go get that checked out. You should really go talk to somebody about that. My field exists for a reason. And I think a lot of times we try to talk ourselves out of it to our own detriment. So folks often end up in front of me because they're in crisis. They have nowhere else to turn. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can do more preventative things.
Oh, thank you for sharing all of that. I know for me personally, I put a post out yesterday on my coloring sheet, my mental health is precious. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it took a long time for me to honor that it is precious, because I was raised that to be strong, you don't show vulnerability. And especially as a woman, you know, it's like, suck it up, buttercup, move forward. And this is a part of who you are. And I'm just subscribing to something different for myself. And a lot of more women that I talk to, and men too, they want something different for themselves too. Like, it's not serving them well. So I love that you shared like these triggers and things to think about in regards to pattern, right? Mm-hmm. Pattern. So thank you, because we constantly need to work on being able to self-assess so we know when to ask for help.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I think that another really important part of this is breaking some of that generational stigma, right? So one of the things that I always share is my own intersectional identities. Typically when I'm doing like a CEU or some other speaking engagement, that's how I'll introduce myself. So I'll do that here. I'm the proud child of immigrant parents. I'm first generation American. That has very much shaped my worldview, right? I'm neurotypical. I am able-bodied. I am cishet. I use she, her pronouns. And all of that influences how I approach the world. being first generation American, my family's from Guyana, from the West Indies. You know, there was no talk of mental health in the house growing up, right? It was, you have a job to do and you just do it. We don't have time to be anxious. We don't have time to be sad. You just have to keep going and you have to keep things in the family. We don't talk to strangers about mental health issues. Yeah. And so, you know, my mom is simultaneously proud and also a little dismayed at what I do for a living, because this is not what we do in Guyana. You don't go and talk to a complete stranger about your issues. And so I again, think that it's incumbent upon all of us, if we want to be healthier in our own mental health and also help the next generation coming up behind us with their mental health and kind of break some of that generational stigma, it comes down to those conversations that we have with each other, but also giving ourselves permission to go and talk to somebody.
Yeah, it's so true. So I just want to share that if you're enjoying this conversation, it's going to continue at the Color to Connect workshop on Saturday, August 13th here in Central Florida. The event link is going to be in the comments and in the show notes, and I do hope that you join us. So Natasha, how can listeners know if they're in a stable place?
I think that if you feel like you're doing okay, right? So I think we've all had at least one moment in life where something seemingly minor happened. Maybe we were running late and we spilled coffee down the front of our shirt. Today I was brave and I wore a white sweater, but that's why I'm drinking water, because if I spill it, it won't stain, right? But maybe you have a morning like that. You spill coffee down the front of your shirt, and the next thing you know, you have lost it. You are now sitting on your kitchen floor, sobbing. There is coffee pooling all around you, and you just don't understand how you got there, right? Because you spilled coffee, you were running late. It's not that big a deal, right? It's not about the coffee spill. It's because there were other stuff. There were other things going on that led up to this moment that seemingly was the straw that broke the camel's back, right?
Yeah.
And so I think your sign that you're stable, that you're doing okay, is when those moments come up, you're able to kind of bounce back from them. Like, I didn't have time for this morning, or I really wish this hadn't happened. I'm already running late. And you have this bank of resiliency, right? And the thing is the way that I describe this when I'm in session with a client is, we all have a bank of resiliency. We all have something to fall back upon. Now, for a variety of different factors, everybody has a different amount in that resiliency bank. And so you also have to think about your own background and where you're coming at things from. If you're not familiar with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, that's another thing that plays a huge role in our resiliency bank and how we bounce back from things. So it's not just about that moment when you're in your kitchen running late and the coffee has spilled down you. If you've got an extensive history of trauma, if you've got, you know, a lot of stress that you've been dealing with, as we all have, I think, because of COVID, I think that's a collective traumatic experience that we all honestly continue to live through. There's an epidemic of gun violence. There's the overturn of Roe v. Wade. I mean, the list goes on and on. There's a lot that we're dealing with. And so for a lot of us right now, the amount that's in our resiliency bank is pretty low. And so something that maybe 5 years ago, you would have had enough to bounce back from. Now, because the amount in your account is so low, you may be very well sitting on the kitchen floor sobbing uncontrollably and not entirely sure how you got there. So I think it's in, has how you've responded to things changed? Does it seem like it's harder for you to deal with things, or that it's okay? Are you able to tap into a support system? It's very important that we have people around us that are encouraging, that are supportive. Unfortunately, family doesn't always fall into that category. Sometimes family can be unhealthy or toxic. And so have you then built a support system of folks that are friends that you maybe count as family that you can talk to, that you can turn to when things do come up. And of course, I think everybody also needs a therapist. So, yeah.
For sure. For sure. Now, you were sharing before we started the interview that this month is...
It's BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. And so if you're not familiar with that term, BIPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. So if moving forward, if you see that acronym anywhere, that's what that means. And it was designated by the American Counseling Association. And so July is BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month. As a member of the American Counseling Association, there have been lots of posts coming up this month. There was an article published just last week on working with African immigrants and best practices for helping that particular population. So they're really shining a spotlight specifically on effective work with BIPOC communities. This upcoming week, we've got two different webinars being offered. And so BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, Black and Brown people need to go to therapy too.
Yes. And I do go to therapy. I'm an advocate of therapy and I do go to therapy.
So. I go to therapy as well. I'll be seeing my therapist on Tuesday. And that's something that we need to talk about it. I don't think that enough of us talk about going to therapy, and we should. And you are allowed to ask your therapist or your potential therapist if they go to therapy. I will not be offended in the slightest. I am happy to tell the people that I work with that, yes, I absolutely do go to therapy. I think every therapist should have a therapist. I don't think that it's fair for me to ask a client to walk through a journey that I myself have not taken. And I count my therapist as a huge part of my support system. So, yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, Natasha, there's a statistic that 5% of mental health counselors are people of color. Why is this a crucial statistic for some that are reluctant to include therapy in their wellness practice?
Absolutely. So another statistic by the American Counseling Association, because I was looking this up this weekend in preparation for today's talk, is that less than 30% of clinicians, licensed professional counselors is the title that they used, identify themselves as BIPOC, as clinicians of color, which is really sad. Because the truth is that's not reflective of the demographic of the United States, right? And that could be a huge barrier. There are many barriers to accessing care. I've been in the field for a number of years now. I'm well aware of what many of those are. And a big one is, I want a therapist that looks like me. And unfortunately, it can be hard to find a therapist that looks like you. However, if that is something that is important to you, I promise you we do exist. It's one of the reasons that I have pretty bad social anxiety. It has gotten better thanks to therapy. But I continue to push myself to do public speaking engagements because I don't think that people know that therapists look like me. Brown therapists do exist. We're out there. And I know that that can be a barrier to care. So here's what I would say. If you are having trouble finding a clinician of color, there are a few different things that you can do. There is a link that we're going to make available, published by the American Counseling Association, in honor of BIPOC Mental Health Awareness Month, that is a directory for finding clinicians of color. And it's further broken down into being able to find a Black therapist or being able to find an Asian therapist, being able to find a Jewish therapist. So it's got subcategories. So there are directories out there like that that do exist. The other thing is not every therapist, even if they're not the same demographic as you, is necessarily going to be a wrong fit, right? So my therapist is white, and I had debated about finding a clinician of color. The reason that I stuck with my therapist is because I have great rapport with her. She called it out in our first session, And I appreciated that. She said, I'm white and I have not had the same life experiences as you. And, you know, kind of calling out the elephant in the room, right? And so the fact that she had that level of cultural sensitivity to understand that her experiences are not the same as mine made it more comfortable for me to continue doing work with her. That may not be the same case for you as you are approaching your own work. So again, I would talk to the therapist. It should be almost like an interview. The way that I approach it when I do an intake with a new client is I say to them, during the intake, I want you to be assessing me. I want you to ask yourself, does this feel comfortable? If you do not feel comfortable talking to me, therapy is not going to work. That doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It means that it wasn't the right fit. The best analogy for that is, I think at some point or another, we've all been to a doctor that just did not have good bedside manner. And so we decided we were not going to go back to that person, right? The same thing is true for therapy. If, and I know that it's hard because it's hard to take that first step to say, I need to go speak to somebody. Then it's hard to find and set up an initial appointment. And then when you get in, if it doesn't feel like the right fit, I know it can be really easy to give up. But I promise you the right fit does exist out there. You may have to meet a couple of therapists in order to get a better idea. The other thing that I would look into is many therapists will offer a 15-minute consultation, typically by phone, so that the two of you can kind of talk a little bit. Maybe they can get a basic understanding of what's been going on, but also you can get an idea of what their personality is like and if you think that that might be a good fit for you. So those would be some things to keep in mind. The other thing is, I really do feel like it is important that all therapists have a professional network. And so if, you know, I had it happen for an intake a couple of months ago, where I had a young African-American male who said, I like you and you seem really nice, but I really want a Black male therapist. And I said, that's fantastic. I know exactly who to refer you to, right? There's nothing wrong with that. He felt like that was going to be a better fit. He advocated for himself. And it is my responsibility to be able to say, that's fantastic. I know exactly who I can refer you to. And I have a list of other clinicians that I know that may be a better fit. So, you know, if you're trans, you may want a trans therapist. Mm-hmm. If you are non-binary, you may want a non-binary therapist. Mm-hmm. I could need in the future a Guyanese therapist, right? They do exist. And so if that's something that you feel is important for you to have in common with your therapist, we can find that. And I have folks reach out to me where I'm not the best fit for whatever reason. Sometimes it's scheduling, sometimes it's insurance, but I know people in the area. I have other clinicians that I know. I have a professional network that I can reach out to. You know, hey, I have a client whose first language is, I don't know, Mandarin. And they would feel more comfortable with a clinician who also is familiar with that language, right? So that's something that as clinicians, it's our responsibility to have that professional network. So there is help out there.
Thank you for sharing all of that. And I'm looking forward to adding that into the show notes for the listeners to use how they need to. Will you please clarify the statistics again? Because I want to make sure that I shared it accurately.
So what I think that I was trying to find the 5% one. The most recent one that I could find was the one from the American Counseling Association. They posted it about a week ago. And according to the American Counseling Association, less than 30% of licensed professional counselors identify as BIPOC. So Black, Indigenous, or people of color. Now that does not include psychologists and psychiatrists or licensed clinical social workers or licensed and marriage family therapists. So when you're looking at mental health professionals, those are other populations as well. So I wonder if that 5% statistic is of the broader field, which may also include school counselors and school psychologists.
Okay. I just want to make sure that what I share is accurate. So it's revised and we're going with what you shared.
Okay.
And thank you for clarifying, because I want to make sure accurate information gets to the listeners.
Sure. It's definitely not as high as it should be. That we can 100% guarantee say. And we need more Black and Brown folks doing therapy. We just need to have more representation in the field. We absolutely do.
So what do you think are some activities, or what are your suggestions, Natasha, for activities that different professionals can do that support their mental wellness, activities they can implement daily or monthly or seasonally, just some ideas beyond meditation?
Sure. So I currently work for Headspace Health, so meditation is usually one of my first answers. I also want you to broaden what your definition of self-care is. I think when we think about self-care, we think about things like bubble baths and massages, and those are absolutely fantastic. Financially, that excludes a significant portion of the demographic, right? So I want you to think about self-care as things that you do that support your mental health. So if you're having maybe a really bad depressive episode, getting out of bed and brushing your teeth every day that week, that counts as self-care. And sometimes that is a goal that I have had with a client. Can you promise me, and can you at least attempt to brush your teeth every day this week? I have done that before multiple times in the past. Eating well is self-care. Or think about what you're putting into your body. You are what you eat. And if all you're eating is fried foods, that makes it a little bit more difficult for you to feel well. Getting good sleep is good self-care. That's something else that you can be doing to take care of yourself. More broadly, being engaged with a support system is so huge. You need to have people that you can talk to, people that you can turn to. Exercising is another really big one. In last week's edition of the American Counseling Association, their journal gets sent to me every month. And one of the articles was spending 30 minutes outside, I think it was once a week, barefoot. So actually in the grass, in the dirt, whatever it is a natural way to improve depression and anxiety. Those of you that are joining us in Florida, we live in the Sunshine State. I understand it's 5,000 degrees outside now. but those early morning blocks of time and those evening blocks of time, you can still get outside and you can still enjoy the sunshine. That's hugely important. Reconnecting with nature is also hugely important. Coloring, right? That's what brought us together in the first place. Coloring is a great coping skill. It helps to keep you in the present moment. It helps to keep you grounded. I actually brought up with me, because this is a true story. So I color in real life. And so this is my stack of coloring books that I use. And one of the things that I do, so like when I'm in an all-day training, I have a hard time paying attention for that amount of time. And so these are some of the things that I've created when I was sitting in my all-day trainings. So I did not just make this up. This is my collection from some of the webinars that I've sat through, right? Coloring is a great coping skill. It helps to quiet some of that outside noise. It helps you focus on what's going on, and it engages a couple of your different senses. So it's a great way of grounding you. And then you also have a finished product that you can then look upon. I have some of these hanging up around, and it's my way of like, oh, I did that, you know, and I'm proud of myself for having done that. So a couple of different ways that I think are pretty accessible to folks. Maybe tapping into a hobby, you know. Have you always wanted to learn how to play guitar, or, learn how to crochet, or maybe learn another language, right? Those kinds of things are also really good ways of taking care of yourself, too.
I love it. And each attendee at the workshop will be getting a copy of my coloring book, Keep Your Stride. Can I get it together here? You guys get the gist. There we go. Everyone that attends the workshop on August 13th here in Central Florida for the live and in-person Color to Connect workshop, you will be getting a coloring book along with some other goodies, but we are going to be coloring. It's a decompressor. I know that I found my way to coloring again as we have been evolving through this pandemic.
Absolutely.
And I find myself coloring like you in the middle of meetings. And just if I'm feeling overwhelmed in a moment, I'm like, okay, 20 minutes. And I'm like, it's so funny. I'll go from like aggressively coloring to like smoothly.
Yes. Yes. I can absolutely
feel the calmness coming down. So I just want to encourage others to find what that is for them. And maybe coloring is that small first step to getting connected to that for them. So
absolutely.
For sure. So how do you personally take care of your mental health? I know you gave us a little tidbits. Were there any additional shares that you may have?
Sure. So one of the things that really helps me is I have a dog, and I say all the time, she is a better therapist than I will ever be. And she really does help to keep me grounded. You know, twice a day we go for a walk. That's not something I would naturally do for myself, honestly. But she can't take herself for a walk around the neighborhood, right? And so she essentially forces me outside of the house to move a little bit and to get out into the sunshine. And I try to borrow some of her mindfulness, you know. We go around the same neighborhood every single day, but every day is a new day to her. Even from morning to evening, it's a brand new walk. She's very excited to be outside. And those are things that we can borrow, you know, from dogs, right? So if you've got a pet is a great coping skill.
For a baby.
Yeah, yeah. She also is a certified therapy dog. And so one of the things that I really enjoy doing is we go on therapy dog visits. And so we go to local schools. We've been to retirement homes, to rehab centers. We just got approved to do visits at one of the local hospitals in Lake Nona. And being with people and sharing her joy just brings me so much joy. You know, family time is hugely important to me. I have three nephews, and I'm not biased, but they are the cutest nephews in the universe. So, you know, spending time with them is another really important thing. And really doing things that I enjoy. I love to cook. And so cooking is a really good coping skill for me. Traveling has been limited because of COVID, but still trying to get around. I've got a vacation coming up later this year that I'm really looking forward to. We're going to do a road trip up to North Carolina. So yeah, it's those things that really feed your soul that you have to make time for. I love learning. So I'm always signing up for continuing education classes. I signed up for one of the CEUs offered by the American Counseling Association later this week. So think about those things that feed your soul and what are you doing to engage with those things and making time for?
Mm-hmm. I love it. For me, it's been learning calligraphy, and it's an ebbs and flow journey.
Yes,
but I'm like, I'm determined to master calligraphy in the midst of everything else is going on. So we'll see what happens. You might get a note from me in calligraphy, and you'll know, like, oh, she's making progress.
I love it. I love it. And also seeing my therapist. You know, that's another really big part of how I take care of me. So, yeah,
that's awesome. And some might not feel that they can afford therapy. And I just want to encourage listeners, if you are gainfully employed and your employer offers EAP services, please utilize that. And then there are other resources out there that will offer discounted services and not at their full rate. So just have a little staycation on the internet and see what you can find. And I mean, even now people can use social media to find it too. So just be resourceful and just do the due diligence to protect yourself and take care of yourself, right?
Absolutely. And if I can expand upon that. So one of the things that I found is a barrier for folks is if you utilize, so EAP stands for Employee Assistance Program. And if you work for a larger company, like a hospital system or a school district or something like that, typically larger employers will offer that as part of the benefits package. And you will get anywhere between 4 to 6 free therapy sessions that your employer pays for. As a therapist, I cannot release information to anybody without your signed consent. I am only allowed to break confidentiality if I am worried that somebody is going to do something to hurt themselves, somebody is going to do something to hurt somebody else, or if they report abuse to me. I'm a state mandated reporter. So if somebody reports child abuse to me, I will make a phone call because I have to report that. Mm-hmm. I am not going to go back to your employer and say, hey, you know, so-and-so, you know, Michelle came to me on Tuesday and she told me how anxious she's been feeling. No, absolutely not. If you do decide to take advantage of the EAP services, the only thing that will be reported to your employer is large numbers. So this is how many sessions were utilized. This is how many folks took advantage of the service. They don't know who went. They don't know any kind of diagnoses. They don't have access to any of those session notes. So if you decide to take advantage of your employer's EAP services, please know that that information does not get released to your employer because it's protected by HIPAA. So the same you know, consent forms that you sign at your doctor's office where, you know, my husband, even if he's in the office with me, if he calls the doctor's office, if he doesn't have a signed release of information, my doctor's office will not release information to him. Therapy falls under the same thing. We're under those HIPAA regulations. So please know that. I really like Therapy Den as an option too. So therapy, the word, den.com. It's a great way to search for therapists in your area. You can break that down by commercial insurance. You can break that down by, you know, I want a Black therapist. You can break that down by all kinds of different demographics. And that's a free resource. Therapy Den is free to just use that as a search option. If your employer offers commercial insurance, as part of the Affordable Care Act, they were required to provide mental health care as part of that. So sometimes they list that as behavioral health services. It can be a little confusing to search for, but if you have insurance through, I don't know, let's say Cigna, you should be able to search the Cigna site and find providers that are in network with your commercial insurance. So just a few different options that you have out there. I know some folks turn to mental health TikTok. I think that that can be a great resource. Just understand who is giving that information out. So if it's somebody that says, I live with XYZ condition and this is my experience, that is an absolutely valid thing. Understand that that's that person's experience. That's going to be different than the information. You know, if I were to introduce myself, I would say, my name is Natasha D'Arcangelo. I'm a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Florida. My license number is public record. Anybody can look that up. I would provide that number on any kind of mental health TikTok so that folks can look me up and see that I'm a valid source. And that's where that information is coming from. So I understand mental health TikTok is free. Just be a little careful about where you're getting that information from and who's providing that information. Talk to the people in your lives too. You'd be surprised how many people go to therapy and they may have a good recommendation for you. In fact, my current therapist I got connected to her because one of the people that I worked with, I was looking for a new therapist and she said, oh, I've been seeing this person and she's fantastic. And so I gave her a phone call and, you know, here I am. That's how I found her, was through a personal recommendation. So, yeah.
I love it. And then I also, those that, like you said, TikTok therapy, Instagram therapy, Facebook mm-hmm. therapy, social media. I really do like that more and more therapists and people that advocate mental health therapy, that they encourage you to find a licensed a therapist. Like, I also find people that make sure they add that footnote into their communication. It's just making sure people get to the right person beyond them. So I just find them to be more easy to follow because they recognize their place.
Yes.
In the messaging. So
yes,
that's important. So yes, another reminder that if you would like to be a part of this live in-person conversation that will continue on August 13th here in Central Florida, at the Color to Connect workshop with Natasha and myself, please join us. The registration link is in the comments, and we definitely look forward to meeting you. And we also look forward to having you participate in future activities with us if you feel that you can benefit from it. We are doing this because we want mental health awareness to continue year round for all people that may not even realize they need it or need to go back to it or just want to improve their quality of life. They want to add to their quality of life. I am on a mission to age well. And one thing that I have learned is that aging well includes taking care of my mental health.
Absolutely. We all have that mind-body connection. And so taking care of your mind is going to help you take care of your body as well.
For sure. Natasha, how can the listeners get in touch with you?
So if you have questions, if you wanted to get some clarification on something, or maybe I mentioned a resource that you're looking for information on, my email, which is not HIPAA compliant, so don't send me personal information on there, is my name. It's Natasha, N-A-T-A-S-H-A, D'Arcangelo, D-A-R-C-A-N-G-E-L-O, @gmail.com. So it's just my name, no spaces, no apostrophe, @gmail.com. I can also be reached at 407-308-2172. If you do decide to call, please do leave me a message so I know to call you back. And also, I have a LinkedIn profile. So if I can answer any other questions, you're more than welcome to look me up on LinkedIn as well. Mm-hmm.
And you can find me, Michelle Beatty, on all social media platforms at Career Tipper. And if you have any questions, definitely just send me a DM. I look forward to communicating with you and helping you connect to ways to evolve to your professional best. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, everyone. I hope this was helpful.